Happy March 3rd, everybody, 2021. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is 3K12 Education Talk Radio, part of our American Consortium for Equity and Education over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. And that's where we're going to archive this podcast like we do with every one of our podcasts. And you're invited to go over there, take a look again, ace-ed.org. You'll enjoy our magazine, our online journal called Equity and Access, our award-winning journal. You'll just love it. Okay, the only educational journal geared towards equity and access as an editorial focus. And all our podcasts are there, plus a ton of other information. We invite you to join with us. Everything we do there at ace-ed.org is free for educators in K-12 and beyond and pre-K, and we hope that you join with us and you'll like what we're doing over there. It's the time to do that. I have a lovely show today. It helped me set up. I got to thank my good friend Ian over at Turn It In, who introduced me to Mark Erlenwine, who is our guest today. And Mark is the principal over at the Staten Island Technical High School. And he has brought, that's, by the way, in New York, all right? And he has brought with him Kristen Fusaro Pizzo, who is an English teacher there and what they call a peer collaborative teacher as well. Ladies first, always. Kristen, good morning. I'm Larry.
Good morning, Larry. So nice to meet you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to meet you, too. And now you have to answer one question. Okay. Are you ready? All right. Well, actually, two questions for someone named Fusaro Pizzo. Okay. You ready? Two questions.
Ready.
Okay. Question one, what does Staten Island have to do with Game of Thrones?
Oh, okay. So George R.R. Martin would live in Staten Island and look over the harbor into New Jersey, and that's where the creation of the Iron Throne came from, looking over that harbor. But George R. R. Martin is from Staten Island.
You're right, and he actually used Staten Island as the map for Westeros. So you are right.
Yep.
You may be the school's principal by the time we're done with this.
I hope not. I love Mark.
Okay, this is very good. Okay, now the second one, again, your last name, your Kristen Fusaro Pizza. Just tell everybody, where's the best pizza at Staten Island? If you don't know this, I'm going to be very disappointed. Best pizza, Staten Island.
Oh, no, this is a big argument. I don't know if I should go on record with that because, that, you know, ask every person and they'll give you a different answer. But the popular ones are Joe and Pass and Zanino's.
There you go. Thank you very much. Now, they were very good answers, okay? Now, Mark, your principal, will you do as well, okay, as Kristen did? Here's your Staten Island question. Where did the name Staten Island come from?
Oh, boy. You're asking, good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Mark.
The person who's not a history buff.
Right.
Do I get to make a call for an assist?
No, you can't. There's no lifelines here. Unfortunately, Kristen is now the principal of Staten Island Technical High School, and you are now the English teacher. Okay,
there's
no problem at all, and I'm sure you're looking forward to that change. Okay, it's actually because the Dutch who named it after their legislature, which is called the Staten.
There we go.
There you go.
That sounds about right, Larry.
It is right. Okay, but Kristen wins hands down. Okay. Kristen wins. Boom. She won.
Absolutely.
Took down in two. Okay. Anyway, these folks are from Staten Island, which again is part of New York, which we can talk about that for about an hour and a half. Staten Island Technical High School. And again, my good buddy Ian over at Turn It In. Mark, how do you know Ian? How'd you guys ever get together?
So basically, as a high school that has been using turnitin.com for quite
cool.
some time in terms of our essay submissions and things of that nature.
Cool.
I think Ian came across some of our peer collaborative teachers, and, you know, Ms. Fusaro, Mr. Mishanya and Dr. Jared Jacks. We have three peer collaborative teachers, which is a teacher leadership position. And
basically,
I believe they just got word of some of the really great work that our teachers were doing around mastery-based assessment. You know, we made a big shift in terms of how we're teaching our students and engaging and assessing our students. And the tool of Turnitin
was
one of those tools that was integral in some of that work. And then we got to meet Ian, and we did a really great podcast, a video blog with Ian. And that's how that connection was made. And since then, we've continued.
And if you think that podcast was good, where do you listen to this one?
I've heard already, yes.
Yeah, that's all. You know, that's all there is to it. Staten Island Technical High School, where you both work, Mark's the principal, and Kristen is one of the teacher leaders there, what they call a peer collaborative teacher, is a high-performing high school, okay, in Staten Island, which we don't know. That is part of New York City, by the way. Okay, you want to argue that now, or should we just continue with that? Is that okay, Kristen, New York City?
It totally is part of New York City.
I know. I was trying to secede, but we'll get into that later. Okay. All right. So you guys are part of New York City schools. You have a very high-performing school. I want you to tell me about your school. Which of you wants to brag and tell me the demographics and what's going on over there at Staten Island Tech? Is it the principal or the teacher leader? Who's going to brag?
Oh, we could take turns doing that. You'll have to
cut
us off at one point.
Go ahead. Go brag, because that's what we're talking about here. Especially, I want to talk about how you supported these kids, okay, in a high-performing school, okay, during this pandemic and prior and after. So first we got to know about the school.
Absolutely. So Staten Island Tech was established going back to around mid-1980s. We officially became a high school in October of 1989, recognized by the New York Board of Regents. So we're a little shy over, you know, with a little over 30 years old, still a newer school. And if you take a look at some of our sister and brother specialized high schools like Stuyvesant, Brooklyn Tech and such, we were originally a magnet school for engineering. And in 2005, after having kind of proven our ground as a place where students, you know, gifted and talented students can receive a very high quality, challenging and rigorous education, we were asked to join the ranks of schools like Stuyvesant, Brooklyn Tech, Bronx Science. So, you know, we now remain as one of the eight specialized high schools in which students have to take a test to get into the specialized high school admissions test. Kristen and I are both alumni. Kristen can speak to her experience there as well. I was in one of the actual original graduating classes of the school. So as I said, when this school was pitched to me as an eighth grader, the prospect of being able to go to a school and learn computer science, it wasn't called STEM or STEAM back then.
Right,
but
right.
Those were the things that attracted me to the school. And back when there was just, you know, there was fewer than maybe at one point the top number of students in the building, the register was around 600 to 700. We're approximately 1,344 students today. About 52% of those students actually live in Brooklyn or off Staten
Island. Really?
So the percent of the students live in Brooklyn. Some live in Manhattan. We have a few in Queens. Once in a while, some in the Bronx who make the trek all the way.
I was just going to say, that's a long ride on the subway.
Yeah, it's 6 hours, both, you know.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Going both ways if you're coming from the Bronx. And then the remainder of that percentage, you know, living on Staten Island. I kind of look at ourselves as a mid-size, the only mid-size specialized high school, because the specialized high schools are either, you know, 3,000 or larger or less than 800. And here we are, like 1,344 students. So we're able to offer what a larger school offers, but still keep a very small, give that small private school feel, like I really say. A lot of people say
that's nice.
It's the best private school education you can get in a public school setting.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's a great
Kristen,
way
would
to
you
put
like
it.
To add to that?
Yeah, please, Kristen.
By the way,
before you go, Kristen, I just want to say I work with – there's a big organization called Magnet Schools of America. I didn't realize you guys are originally a magnet school, and I work with them a lot. So I know how they operate. It's very impressive to me. But anyway, go ahead, Kristen.
No, I'm just saying what Mark's explanation is pretty comprehensive. I don't really have much to add to that.
Well, actually, there is something I can ask you. And I'm very curious about this, and I always am. What's the demographics at the school?
So
is it like male, female, black, white, however you want to measure that? it's free and reduced lunch. Most people give me that one, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right. So there's approximately 65% male, 45%, 55-45 male-female split. In terms of the demographics,
great.
We have about a little over 50% of our students are Asian, 43% Caucasian, less than 1% of our students are of color, and about 3.5% Hispanic. And then, Department of Ed as a category, there's, grouping of a mix of different cultures that are recognized as well. So that's what, and that is something that changed drastically from the time we became a specialized high school. If you looked at our statistics back in 2000, from 1989 to 2005, the diversity of the school looked very different than it does now. And and part of that came down to, it's more reflective of what the demographics of Staten Island looked at the time, because we didn't have as many students coming from off island.
Right, right.
But now that students have access to our school from all five boroughs, it's more reflective of, the performance of students on the specialized high school admissions test amongst those five boroughs. We have about 15,000 students who indicate interest in our school of the 28,000 who take the specialized high school test each year.
Wow. Wow.
It's tough to
it's
get
amazing.
Into.
And I got to tell you, I'm very impressed. I'm thrilled to hear that number. I wish it were even more equal, but it's good. It's great. 55-45 male, female at a technical high school. Okay, that's really something very important. Okay, I think. Kristen, do you agree?
Yeah, I think if anything, the fact that it's just technical high school is a bit of a misnomer, because our humanities and arts and performing arts programs are absolutely incredible as well.
Ah,
so
thank you for explaining that. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say, Larry, that over time, I'll use a Star Wars reference, because some people kind of pick up on, there's the Jedi and the SIPs and the acronym. If you look at the letters that spell out our school, SITHS, we're the SIPs. So Star Wars geeks will kind of travel out to Disney's Galaxy Edge, right? That new theme park in Disney, to kind of experience that aspect of Star Wars, and surrounded by the rest of the theme park. It's kind of where we started a long time ago, I guess, of the galaxy far, far away on Staten Island. But what we've done is we've really expanded upon the strengths and the opportunities in the other disciplines as well. So as much as we're a pre-engineering high school because of the technical association, our humanities, our arts, foreign language, is just as strong. And that's sometimes where we have to do a stronger selling of our school as a destination.
Today.
I mean, our school has only taught the Russian language since its inception, and we continue to do that. And Ms. Fasaro is one who actually went forward and continuing her studies in college, like many of our students continue to do. So there's a lot of nuances and special things beyond just the fact of being a technical school.
Right. Thank you for explaining that, both of you. That's really very, very important. And as a guilty pleasure, I have to tell you, I just watched Revenge of the Sith on video last night.
Oh, good choice.
Okay. Godly, you should bring that up, which makes you Emperor Palpatine, but Mark is principal, but I'm not going to get into that, okay? And Mrs. Vader, we'll talk about you a little bit later. Okay, so no problem there. Between the two of you running, that's funny. It's the Sith. It is Staten Island Technical High School. That's great. The kids, you have a good school. It's a high-performing school, and you carefully select the kids. Okay, and they know what they're getting into. Okay, they may know that, but they're still kids, all right? And they get under pressure, and moms and dads, and if I can stereotype just a little bit, especially Asian moms and dads, really do put a lot of pressure on their kids, okay, to do very, very well in school. All that said, in a normal year, okay, that's tough and that's hard. In the year we just had and are currently having, I might add, we might want to talk about where we are in New York City right now with all this, it's even harder, all right? And I want you to talk about that. And, Kristen, I'm going to start with you because, Kristen, you're a teacher, okay? And you have to deal with this literally every day in the trenches, but on top of that, the trenches have been moved to remote. Talk about whether you're remote now, hybrid, what's going on, okay, and how everybody's doing over there and what you guys are doing, and from the teacher's point of view, to help the mental health thing and really social-emotional learning as we go through this this mess and where it's going to go in the future. I'll throw that on to Kristen, the pizza king of the pizza queen of Staten Island.
So I'm so glad, actually, that we're having this conversation because it's social-emotional learning and trauma-invested education has become something that's very close to my heart, especially in this particular environment. Right now, all of New York City high schools are still on a remote schedule, and we have been since November. So for high schools, there is no hybrid yet. Everyone is remote. Don't know when things are going to switch back. Honestly, the way everyone is informed, principals, superintendents included, are usually on Twitter. So as far as, I think the main thing to look at is not just student health, but also teacher mental health, both.
Thank you. I was going to just bring that up. Thank you. Go ahead. Continue.
Yeah, because of the fact that, I mean, all humans can adapt to basically all situations if you're given enough time. And in these circumstances, when we're given enough time, even the distance learning platform, I feel like we've been very adaptable. It's when they continue to keep changing our schedule and telling us going back, sending home, going back, sending home. That's what's causing the trauma and stress for both. Because teachers want to adapt, and I'm speaking across the board as a New York City teacher, more than just Staten Island Tech High School. We all want to adapt and obviously do what's best for kids.
Right.
It's just so hard when every day it's different and we don't know what's coming towards us. Now, so what a lot of our teachers are doing, myself included, I currently teach three senior classes, 12th grade students. It's a college-level course, and our sessions are about, they're 75 minutes each. It's all remote.
Wow.
And I spend five minutes every single class session doing a check-in with my students. Sometimes I have them use a word from the mood meter. Sometimes I have them pick a number from what I call like the blob tree, and it's all these different like humanoid figures doing different things. And I ask them to chat or private chat me, whatever they're comfortable with, telling me what their mood is. If it's something that falls on the more of a negative connotation, I will send them a private anecdotal, which is our messaging system. Just say, hey, what's going on? I'm listening. And just instituting that as part of the daily routine, which I've been integrating with the other teachers as I'm coaching them, just letting the kids know, hey, somebody cares. You know, we really do care about how you're feeling. Do you need a little bit of extra time? And that's just the human aspect, like, hey, how are you? And actually meaning it. On the bigger scale, which I'm sure Mark will jump into, we've completely switched our mindset around grading, the concept of grading shifted out the door into a feedback loop and feedback conversations with portfolios and project-based learning, just so that it really becomes more about the learning and dismissing the aspect of schooling, you know, the learning and not the schooling. And I think that's important to differentiate for mental health on both levels.
Right. That's a great quote, by the way. It always reminds me, I've said this a million times. Well, I always say we should change the name of the profession from being a teacher to being a learning facilitator. Because the
Absolutely.
Teacher, the word teacher puts the onus on us. But teaching doesn't matter if kids aren't learning, all right? And that's what our real goal is, to make sure the kids are learning, All right. And what you just said, it just echoes that exactly. And we've just got to be so careful about all this, et cetera. Chris, I want you to do me a favor. There was just a little bit of feedback when you were speaking. Hang up and just call right back in. I think that'll clear that up.
Oh, sure. Sorry about that.
Don't apologize. It's simple. We can understand you. I just want to see if we can clear it up for the future. Just hang up, call right back in, okay?
Okay.
And Mark is there, and while she's doing that, Mark, talk about what Kristen mentioned and how all of your teachers are reacting to this. And this is hard for you to manage as a principal. Who expected this? Okay, and then how are they doing in terms of their own social emotional well-being, which then will reflect upon the kids? Mark Erlenwine.
Yeah. So, thank you. So, from a instructional standpoint, I think last year around this time, with the pandemic upon us, we
right.
had a sense. I mean, I just had a feeling and a sense that the schools were going to close, and we needed to.
Yeah.
We couldn't wait to make, you know, a shift. So, and when I became principal in 2013, we'd gone 1-to-1. So we got all students, each grade took 4 years to phase in, but all students went digital as a school. We got iPads for all of our students, and then eventually went to bring your own device. So we had 7 years in the pocket of practice around digital learning, digitizing the process, and really coming up with and creating tools that once the time came to shut the school, we transitioned seamlessly.
Well, great. Wow.
Yeah, no, it was.
Wow.
You know, it was a championship moment, and the teachers felt good.
Yeah. Well said.
And vindicated about, you know, this wasn't the original why, reason as to why we did this, right? We just felt that, you know, 21st century learners, you know, this is what learning is going to look like, communications is going to look like, and interacting is going to be like. So creating that environment in our school setting was, you know, made sense to myself and the team back then. So the seamless transition and change continues to be very effective, and my peer collaborative teacher team continues to support our teachers in making sure that they have, you know, they refine their use of the tools and are kept in the loop of anything new that comes along. But, you know, the truth is, as this continues to, you know, to kind of purvey, I'm very active in the technology community, the software developers that are creating these tools and stuff like that. I interact with lots of them. And, you know, just having Google Meet, you know, Google Meet and Zoom have done what they need to do for this, you know,
yep.
to get us to this
Agreed.
Point.
Agreed.
But it's, you know, it becomes very flat, even with all the little ways that you can tweak it and put students in the breakout rooms. I mean, nothing compares to in-person learning. And that's what's missing here. I think there's a sense of it becomes claustrophobic after a while when you're looking at the screen all the time.
So how are the kids doing? How are the kids doing? Okay, you have the catbird seat up top there as principal. How are the kids doing?
I mean,
and I'm talking
yeah.
about both. Well, let me ask you three ways: attendance wise, academically, and social emotionally or mental
yes.
health wise.
So attendance wise, attendance wise, we have about 99.7% of our students online. And they show up every day. So
that's rather high. I think you can say 100%. If one kid is missing,
that's okay. You want
to
round it up. About 100%.
We're good. Yeah, 100%. We're good. That's that's amazing. Congratulations to you guys and all your teachers for doing that. So, all right, now, academically, how are they doing?
Academically,
wow.
I mean, they're still doing, you know, fantastic. You know, we moved away from, you know, our specialized high schools and schools like ours. Sometimes they are deemed like the land of numbers, where it's all about the grades and such.
Yeah,
so as Kristen alluded to before, we kind of threw that out the window years ago, shifted to letter grades because it was more of a range of a score. And in some cases now, I've even gone to mastery-based assessments where it's more about feedback now versus, you know, it's not about the grades anymore, which is great.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
That, you know, that has continued to translate well for, you know, how we're doing academically. You know, there are more kids who are struggling than there have been in the past, because, you know, they thrive better in environments where they're physically being engaged and could be. You know, it's you can only read so much from a student's face when sometimes you're not even seeing their face on the screen.
Yep.
You know, all the that social emotional output that we kind of receive from our kids and pick up on those cues. None of this translates well for doing that. And then now you're really relying on, well, who's not showing up, who's being too silent, and who do we have to really work with closer. So it's more of a challenge now. So from a social-emotional standpoint, I think the students and the teachers, while they're continuing to thrive, they continue to show up, you know, this process is wearing. And there's a, you know, there's a dire need to get back into a, you know, a normal in-person situation sooner versus later. It's going to take time to recap and recoup everything that just happened.
It really is, and here's the big question, okay? And your kids, it sounds like, if I may, they're doing pretty well, okay? They're doing pretty well, okay? So what happens, and I'll ask both of you this, okay? When and I think things are going to get back to normal, I hope, soon with the vaccine, certainly next September, God willing, all right? Or over the summer, maybe even, all right? And my point is, what have we learned from all this, and how is it going to make a change in the future? Okay, you know, or will the other question is, will it make a change in the future? All right, and Kristen, I want to ask you, you've had a year of this. Okay, people are talking about that there will always now be a virtual, more of a virtual side. Okay, and your kids, I'm sure, are again good academic performers. They're concerned about getting into colleges. Okay, and this year, because of the way assessments have had to happen, which I congratulate you guys on, the way you're doing it, have changed things in terms of the ways we get into colleges. The colleges need to change. So next year, what do you see happening next year? And you, again, you're a teacher leader. It has to happen with the teachers too. Okay, with all this craziness, what do you see?
So there was a lot to be learned over the last year and change, like starting, you know, a year ago, literally a full year. And I think that the biggest thing is the paradigm shift in assessment, like you just mentioned. And I really hope, and I know for my, I can speak for myself, that I plan on keeping my dynamic shifts. I threw all tests, quizzes out the door into the garbage.
Good for you.
This is completely useless, and I ask myself consistently, and this is what I encourage other teachers to do, and about being reflective. What are my students learning by doing this assessment? If they can't answer that question, then I challenge teachers to throw the assessment out the door. If they're not learning with the assessment itself, then I don't
feel
that it's useful.
Learning.
You
know? Yep.
Right, exactly. Like, if you have to, if anything, this year has taught us about our mortality, right? And time is our most precious commodity. So if you can't use that time to be productive as well, I don't see how the assessment is useful. You shouldn't just be getting data from your assessments. That you know, that's a core aspect of it. But more from it, what are the students learning while they're doing it? And I really hope that dynamic paradigm shift is what's going to continue to persist from the remote world. And I've gotten feedback from my students. I actually asked them to do as just a side extra credit for my own research, like, what have you felt about, like, this new portfolio process, this new project process? And I've gotten literally 100% positive feedback directly from their mouths that I've recorded. This way I
Fantastic.
Have evidence.
They're the customers.
Exactly.
They're the customers.
Exactly.
Yeah, we forget that sometimes. But now let me ask you this, though. And again, you said about 50% of the kids are Asian, about 40%, if I got this right, are Caucasian. All right. And so, but they all want to go to college. You got 98% of kids, I would bet you, are college bound or higher education bound. Let me put it that way. Okay. Are they concerned about getting into school next year, you know, getting into school in a timely manner? Is there any pressure coming on that? Have you heard anything on that?
I don't think the concern is any different than it's always been for
our
particular students, because the pressure to go to college just has always been there. And a lot of it is even intrinsic more than coming from families, just like for themselves, because these are, they're just high achieving students overall.
They are.
But it's more, yeah, so it's more about not like what's happening in school to help them get to college, but what are the colleges doing to change their accessibility?
Thank you. Thank you very much for saying that, that they have to make changes. Hopefully they have learned a tremendous lesson from this higher education. Okay, we're going to see where that goes, okay? But that's a key thing, all right? Mark, getting back to you, okay, what are your concerns for next year? Okay, knowing what we went through this year, okay, and you've got a staff and students to manage, okay? What are your concerns? And I'm sure you're talking to your counselors, et cetera. What's going on there? Again,
well, I think
the mental health of your kids, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think our biggest concern, you know, from my perspective, is it appears that there's still going to be some element of remote learning for families to choose from if they're not ready to send their children back to school yet. So, just, you know, we went from a 9-period day in our traditional schedule to a 3-period block scheduling model, which has made we're currently doing work so well. I mean, from a stress standpoint, in terms of having just around right amount enough of work to do each day without driving kids crazy. You know, three periods versus 9 periods of work, course of 3 days, you know, it's done a lot of good things, you know, for our students and our faculty. But it was an adjustment. So, you know, we're now faced with thinking about, so do we continue that for the fall? And cause that's always been a dream of ours, is to kind of switch to a block schedule and students and teachers more time to focus on their areas that they're working on with students and get to know them better, rather than have this same regimented schedule each day. But then, you know, equating that to, well, what is it going to look like, and who is going to be solely responsible for the students who are remote versus the students who are in person. Right now, all of our teachers, you know, they basically take care and responsibility for all of those students, whether they're in the building or not. And we have a unique schedule in the AM. Is it, when we were back in the building, our teachers were working with the students in person, and then in the afternoon, they'd repeat the schedule they had in the morning, and they would teach the students who were remote. So we kind of have like there's an echo effect of what we were doing when our schools were actually open. So that's the big question for the fall.
Yeah.
And then the largest question is, you know, what more can we do, and how can we, like I said before, just kind of recoup, you know, some of the damage that was done over this past year, and really create a healing phase.
Yeah, and you've got to. And actually, I'm thinking here, you're not – obviously, you work in the largest school district in the country, which is New York City, okay? But there are, in particular, you mentioned this before, I think, 8 specialty high schools, okay? So let's just say knock it down to a group of 8, and I imagine the schools are facing similar challenges, okay, because of the way the 8 schools are set up. When you talk to your fellow, the other 7 principals, the other 7 leaders, okay, are you guys in agreement about where this thing, how things are going to change, et cetera? And also, how much comes down from the very top? How much leeway do you have working in such a gigantic system?
Well, I mean, I think each of our schools approached this differently, even the specialized high schools.
Interesting.
And it all came down to, you know, honestly, like, you know, how many faculty members, you know, did you have in your building that could physically teach? Some of the specialized high schools are in college campuses, so they don't have the autonomy of using a building and physically breaking the building up how they need to in order to bring students in on a daily basis. So, you know, we have the luxury of having our own building that we don't share it with another facility. So we were able to figure out how many kids we could bring into the building safely at a time. So with that being said, I mean, you know, every school has kind of created their own way of delivering their instruction and what they're known for. Yeah, so that's going to be, I feel that challenge is upon us once again for the fall, once we understand, and it is, we're following the guidance from the central offices as they're analyzing the health and the safety protocols and aligning them with how we normally run schools,
yeah.
and then reprocessing that to adapt to what we're currently trying to do right now. I don't see that the testing going away for the time being until this thing really becomes something that's a bit more predictable, if that's even possible. And I guess the more vaccines they get, members and such.
Are teachers prioritized? I don't know in New York.
Are they
prioritized?
Yeah.
Good.
Teachers.
Do you get your shots? Yeah. Do you get your shots, Kristen?
No, not yet.
I did not because I'm pregnant, so I'm waiting.
Congratulations.
Until after I give birth. Thank you.
Congratulations, and let me just wait a minute before we. Now that I know that, let me give you a great name, whether it's a boy or a girl. Name the child Larry. Just a thought. Congratulations, that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay, that's great. So that means you don't get vaccinated. Is that what that means?
My doctor said because I don't have a comorbidity that it, there's just not enough research for pregnant women yet.
Had I had one,
then the risks would outweigh, then the benefits would outweigh the risk. But because right now thank God I don't have that. She said, just wait until I give birth, which I'm fine with.
Good.
But
what does the baby do? What does little Larry do? What does Larry do?
May 25th.
So. Oh, fantastic. Sue, congratulations. That's wonderful. Okay, that's great news. Okay, and little Larry will be a very happy child and a very smart child. I can guarantee you that because she's got a great mommy.
So.
I think it'll happen. Okay, so, for next year, I guess I know you have a maternity leave for some time, but are you going to come back next year, Kristen? Come back. Will you be able, this is a tough question because, again, you're in this giant system. Will you guys be able to keep your assessments? I know they dumped the regents. I think they dumped the regents, thank God. Okay, but will you guys be able to keep your assessment working the way it is in light of the fact you're in a big system that demands data? Kristen, I'll ask you, and then what do you know about that? Because I agree with you when you said about assessment.
Yeah, so I think the word data could be pervasive. People assume data is just numerical. There's total data. There is just evidence of overall learning. You don't just need a multiple choice test in order to assess if a student is learning or not. They have, there are many pathways of assessment. So we can provide data. Every teacher in our building has plenty of data, just different pathways than a number on a piece of paper.
I love what you just said. That's great. You screamed from the mountaintop on that one. Okay. I'm serious. Okay. If we have to learn things, as lousy as this pandemic was and is, I might add, is, okay, we have to learn things from it. Every cloud has a silver lining, and this thing, okay, has to teach us to look at what we were doing. And although we always say, let's get back to normal, we want normal to be different. You guys are learning how to do this in the strangest environment of all. Who knew? And by the way, Mark, I just want to ask you one thing. All of this and professional development for your teachers. I mean, none of them were taught to teach online. None of them were taught to teach stressed out kids who are working online, trapped in their apartments and houses. Okay, what's going on with PD?
Well,
we got about 3 minutes left. Yeah.
Yeah, so you're talking to myself and one-third of that team of teachers. Like I said, we have three peer collaborative teachers, Kristen being one of them.
Yep.
Each of them have a specialty in an area where they really just have honed their skills at the highest level. So that team of three teachers have been integral in creating a landing page of their own that has all the resources and tools that we've been using since the beginning of remote learning. Kristen puts out this incredible monthly newsletter in which the peer collaborative teachers contribute to and write original articles and share resources in terms of, what are the trends, what are the tricks, and then how you can get more support. And we've opened this past fall a UFT teacher center in the building, which is going to allow teachers to get CTLE accredited. CTLE accredited courses to continue to build, you know, their knowledge base of these tools and pedagogical practices that really make sense during the pandemic and are going to transcend and translate the post-pandemic. So, we have a really great and amazing team who has been really at the cutting edge of keeping us abreast and ahead of the curve.
Wow. It's, you put together a good team there at a good high school with good kids. You're lucky. And let's all learn from this. We got to go, all of you. And one final question, Mark, Kristen, which one was the better podcast, Ian's or mine? Which one was more?
Yours, absolutely.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
Kristen wins again.
Right.
Kristen wins again. That's amazing. The woman is an astounding person. Okay,
it's
unbelievable.
All the pizza.
Right. Keep eating that pizza, okay? Keep eating it, okay? You guys are doing great. Kristen, best of luck with the baby, okay? Take care of
that little guy,
okay? Or gal, whatever.
Thank you for
Oh, it's my pleasure. And Mark, it's great to know you, my friend. Keep up the good work. You're doing a great
job. Same here, Larry. Thanks for having us this morning.
Oh, my pleasure. You guys take care. All right, enjoy Westeros Island, Staten Island, okay? From Game of Thrones.
Sometimes it's just like that. Thank you.
Mr. and Mrs. Vader, the Emperor and Mrs. Vader, thank you very much. From Sith. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Okay? Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Are they great or what? Staten Island Technical High School, the principal, Mark Erlen Wine, and they're one of their lead teachers, what they call a peer collaborative teacher, Kristen Fusaro. Pizza, okay, and it's just lovely to have them here. That's just great. To my buddy Ian over, turned it in. Thank you, great folks. Okay, just terrific. All right, we're going to archive the show at ace-ed.org, our consortium for equity. I hope Mark and Kristen and the rest of you go over there to ace-ed.org and join with us. And we're really trying to get some great work done over in the field of equity for pre-K-12 education. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.